Imagine being handed this massive, incredibly dense, advanced calculus textbook when you're really just trying to learn basic addition.
Oh yeah, instant panic.
Right, just complete suffocating overwhelm. And honestly, that is exactly how most people feel when they take their very first steps on a spiritual journey. You look at a primary text like the Bible, and it's thick, the language can feel totally archaic, and it's just incredibly intimidating.
It really
You
is.
just stare at it and think, where do I even begin with this thing? So today on the Deep Dive, we're going to completely dismantle that overwhelming feeling. We're unpacking this brilliant, paradigm-shifting document simply titled The Key.
And it really is a paradigm shift, you know.
Exactly. And our mission today is custom tailored for you, the listener, especially if you're just beginning to explore your spiritual side. We are taking these massive, historically complicated concepts and distilling them into a framework that completely reframes how you look at spiritual growth. We're shifting it from a heavy, restrictive rule book to a tool of ultimate access.
Which is everything. I mean, that shift in perspective is everything for a beginner. Because traditionally, we tend to approach a spiritual text with just so much
Oh,
baggage.
absolutely. Tons of
We
baggage.
look at it as this historical encyclopedia that we have to somehow memorize, or, a philosophical treatise we're supposed to debate, or, and I think this is the most damaging one, a really heavy compliance manual.
Oh, like a list of all the things you're not allowed to do.
Exactly, a
Yeah.
rule book designed to restrict your life. But the document we're unpacking today asks us to basically throw all of those assumptions right out the window. It challenges us to view the Word of God purely as a master key.
A master key.
Yeah, think about the fundamental nature of a key. Its entire design, its whole reason for existing in the universe, is to take a space that is closed off and open it. It turns a solid barrier into a gateway.
So let's unpack the mechanics of that, because before we can really use any tool properly, we have to understand its actual purpose in the real world. Like, think about the keys sitting on your kitchen counter right now. A key is an incredibly specific utilitarian object. Treating a spiritual text like a rule book is like taking a master key, putting it under a microscope, analyzing the shape of its teeth, debating what metal it's made of with your neighbors, but never actually putting it into a door.
Right, it completely defeats the purpose.
Or worse, using it to try and pry open a paint can or something. Just a fundamental misuse of the object. A key is meant to unlock things. It takes what's entirely inaccessible to you and suddenly makes it available.
Yeah, it acts as a mechanism of access. When you have the right key, you don't have to, kick the door down.
Thank goodness.
Right, you don't have to possess incredible physical strengths to break through the barrier. The design of the tool does the work for you. It grants you access to whatever's on the other side.
Okay, I mean, I get the key metaphor conceptually, I really do, but practically, I want to push back on this just a little bit.
Sure, go for it.
Because if the whole purpose of this text is simply to act as a key to unlock the reality of heaven in your everyday life, why do so many beginners feel the exact opposite?
That's the big question.
Yeah, why does starting a spiritual practice so often feel less like being handed a master key to a mansion and way more like being locked inside a giant padlock of restrictions?
Honestly, that is the ultimate hurdle for anyone starting out. And to understand why that happens, we really have to look at the psychology of human nature.
Okay.
Human beings crave control. We just do.
Yeah.
We crave predictability, especially in areas of life that feel vast, mysterious, or uncontrollable, which spirituality certainly is.
Very true.
So we tend to overcomplicate the spiritual journey. Because a rigid set of rules actually feels safer to our anxious minds than the vast freedom of an open door.
Oh, wow. That makes a lot of sense because rules give you scorecard, don't they? You can measure if you followed a rule.
Exactly. You can literally check a box at the end of the day. Did I do this?
Yeah.
Did I avoid that specific behavior? Am I officially a good person today?
Right.
We voluntarily turn the spiritual journey into a compliance checklist because it gives us this false but very comforting sense of control over our own destiny.
It's like we want the padlock.
Yeah, we do. But the document we're analyzing argues that this approach completely neutralizes the power of the text. Treating it like a padlock is exactly what causes that massive burnout so many beginners experience.
Which is so common.
So shifting this core expectation, waking up and realizing that you hold an instrument of access not an instrument of restriction, is the crucial first step.
Okay, so once we actually make that psychological shift, the immediate next question is, what exactly are we opening?
Right.
Because my natural assumption, and I know I fell into this trap when I first started exploring these ideas, is that a spiritual practice is supposed to unlock some kind of external magical force.
Oh, a magic spell approach?
Yes. I treated it like a magic spell. I would, like, say the right words, read the right verse, and expect God to drop a lightning bolt of patience or money or strength straight out of the sky to fix my Tuesday.
That lightning bolt expectation is incredibly common. We basically operate from the premise that we are these totally empty, deficient vessels just wandering around on Earth, waiting for an external deposit of power to fall on our heads.
And when that doesn't happen, we just assume, well, the key is broken, or I didn't turn it hard enough.
Which just leads to even more frustration. But the text points out a massive paradigm shift here. It argues that the key is not designed to unlock the heavens to drop something down on you.
Okay.
It's actually designed to unlock the power of God that is already within you. The argument presented is that for those who believe, the Spirit of God already dwells inside you.
So you're not empty.
Exactly. You are not walking around as an empty vessel. The power you're begging for isn't absent. It's simply locked away.
I see. It's locked behind these incredibly heavy internal doors. Doors of doubt, of past trauma, of fear, and just, you know, our own perceived human limitations.
Yes, exactly that.
So the text isn't a magnet trying to pull power down from the clouds. It's the literal key to unlock the reservoir of potential you already have sitting in the basement of your own soul.
The basement imagery is perfect. And now we have to explore how the text actually functions as a key to open that basement door.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't just statically describe power on a page.
Right.
It activates it in the reader. When you read a specific truth, it bypasses that anxious, doubting, analytical part of your brain. It acts as an authoritative interrupt to your negative thought loops, reminding your spirit of your core identity.
Let's ground this in the real world for a second, because the document gives us two very tangible examples of this activation mechanism. The first one is courage.
Yeah.
The text brings up the specific verse that states, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. So for a beginner, how does merely reading that sentence act as a turning key?
Well, think about what fear actually is. Fear is often a physiological and psychological response based on a perceived threat.
Yeah, for sure.
And it acts as one of the heaviest doors we lock ourselves behind. It completely paralyzes action. So when you interact with that specific verse, you are confronting the lie that you are inherently weak or that you are meant to live in a state of constant timidity.
Well, that's really interesting.
The text serves as this objective external truth that challenges your internal subjective panic.
Yeah.
It basically turns the lock by giving you permission to access the boldness that was already dormant inside you.
It's like an authoritative voice cutting through all the noise in your head.
Exactly.
And the second example is endurance, which honestly is so relatable because sometimes you don't need a massive cinematic burst of courageous boldness to slay a dragon. Sometimes you just need to get through a deeply exhausting 12-hour shift at work.
Yes, just surviving the day.
Right. And the text points to the promise that His grace is sufficient for you.
And we really need to unpack the word grace there because it's one of those pieces of religious jargon that often just gets glossed over.
It really does.
In this context, the document frames grace as unearned, unmanufactured sustenance. When you're at the end of your rope, your natural inclination is to try and white-knuckle your way through, right? To manufacture endurance out of sheer willpower.
Which usually lasts about 10 minutes before you completely snap at someone.
Because human willpower is a finite resource. It runs out. Turning the key here, internalizing the promise that His grace is sufficient, it shifts the burden of performance.
Oh, so.
You're acknowledging that you are out of strength and you're using the text to access a supply of endurance that is completely independent of your physical or emotional exhaustion. It's a profound release of the need to be totally self-sufficient.
Okay, so having the endurance to just weather the storm and survive a brutal day is absolutely vital. But honestly, if we zoom out, just surviving the day isn't much of a life.
No, it's not.
Like, what is the actual quality of that day supposed to feel like? And that question takes us to the second major thing this document says the key unlocks, which is joy.
And this is where the modern spiritual journey often takes a really severe wrong turn.
Oh, yeah.
There is a massive tendency for beginners to confuse spiritual fulfillment with having a perfect, frictionless life. The assumption is, like, if I am doing this spirituality thing correctly, my life should be smooth sailing.
Ah, the ultimate good vibes only trap. Like, if I have enough faith, I'll never get a flat tire and my boss will always love me.
Exactly.
But the text makes a vital distinction between happiness and joy, and it's a distinction we really need to highlight. Happiness, as described here, is entirely circumstantial. It's
Right.
completely dependent on your external environment. If your bank account is full, your health is great, your relationships are thriving, you experience happiness. But the second the stock market crashes or you get a scary medical diagnosis, that happiness evaporates into thin air.
Because happiness is purely a reaction. It's fragile by its very design, built on the shifting sands of human experience. Joy, on the other hand, is described as foundational.
Foundational.
Yeah, it's the bedrock of a house. It remains steady and intact, even when a Category 5 hurricane is actively shaking the walls around you.
But let's get really practical here, because I can hear a beginner listening to this and thinking, okay, foundational joy sounds great on a podcast, but I just lost my job. Or I'm going through a deeply painful divorce right now.
Yeah, real life stuff.
Exactly. How does reading words on a page unlock a joy that transcends logic during those moments? It almost sounds dismissive of real human pain.
And that is a completely valid reaction. It highlights exactly why understanding the mechanics of this key is so critical. True spiritual joy does not mean slapping a fake plastic smile on your face and pretending a job loss or a divorce doesn't hurt.
Right.
That is toxic positivity, and it is deeply damaging. What the key of scripture actually does is unlock a much larger perspective. When you're in the middle of a sudden crisis, your world shrinks rapidly.
You get severe tunnel vision.
Exactly. Your brain's threat response system takes over, and all you can see is the immediate pain, the immediate lack, the closed door right in front of your nose.
It's like your camera is stuck on a tight macro lens, focused entirely on a crack in the wall.
That's a great analogy. And when you use the text as a key, it doesn't magically patch the crack in the wall. Instead, it changes the lens on your camera from that tight macro shot to a massive wide-angle landscape shot of your entire existence.
Oh, wow.
It faces your brain to break out of the immediate panic and reminds you that your current struggles, no matter how agonizing they are not the absolute end of your story.
It shifts your focus from the temporary chaos to the permanent facts.
Exactly. And what are those permanent facts? In that wide-angle shot, you see the realization that you are deeply loved, completely forgiven and eternally secure.
Yeah.
Think about the implications of that. Those three things, loved, forgiven, secure, they are completely independent of your current circumstances. They don't fluctuate with the job market. They are fixed facts of your spiritual reality.
That's so freeing.
When the key unlocks your awareness of those unshakable facts, the byproduct is joy. It's this quiet, deep-seated confidence that the world did not give you, and therefore the world simply lacks the authority to take it away.
That reframing is so incredibly powerful. It means you can be actively weeping, actively grieving a terrible situation, completely unhappy about your circumstances, and yet still possess that foundational joy underneath it all at the exact same time.
Yes, it's not an either scenario.
It allows you to be fully messily human while simultaneously anchoring you to something divine.
It creates a dual reality. You are weathering the storm, but your anchor is holding on the ocean floor.
But honestly, even with that wider perspective, it is nearly impossible to feel any kind of lightness or joy if you're being actively crushed by the weight of your own life.
Very true.
Joy requires a certain amount of space to breathe. And this brings us to a brilliant pivot in our source material. We usually think of keys as tools to let good things out, like unlocking a treasure chest of internal power or foundational joy. But keys have another vital function.
They do.
They are also used to let us out of things.
The prism metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone just stepping onto a spiritual path, this might be the most transformative function of the key to grasp. We don't start these journeys with a blank slate. We bring immense baggage to the starting line.
Oh, totally. We wake up every morning and walk into our day carrying burdens we were quite literally never biologically or spiritually built to carry.
Trying to be the CEO of the universe.
Right. We try to figure out the universe on our own. And the text identifies two very specific internal prisons that this key is designed to unlock. The first is the prison of the past, specifically the chains of guilt and our own mistakes.
The human mind just has a terrible habit of building an identity around failure.
We all know that 3 a.m. doom spiral. You're
Right.
lying in bed and your brain just starts looping a replay reel of your worst moments. Every time you snapped at your kids, every time you failed at a job, every time you let someone down.
It's exhausting.
It's an agonizing imposter syndrome mixed with a fear that you are permanently disqualified from anything good.
and we drag that condemnation around like physical iron chains. It exhausts us before the day even begins. The document highlights how the key operates in this specific scenario. It points to a definitive spiritual declaration. There is therefore now no condemnation.
No condemnation.
You need to unpack what that actually means. Condemnation is the final sentence of guilt. It is the gavel coming down. When you truly insert that truth into your mind, that there is no condemnation, and turn it, you are short-circuiting the 3 a.m. replay reel.
Oh, that's good.
The lock clicks open. You are liberated from the internal demand to constantly punish yourself for a past that, according to the text, has already been entirely forgiven.
It completely neutralizes that toxic guilt. It's like a massive exhale. But then the text points to the second prison, which attacks us from the completely opposite direction. It's not the past, it is the future. It's the prison of anxiety.
Yeah, if guilt is the heavy chain dragging behind you, tethering you to yesterday, anxiety is the crushing, suffocating weight pressing down on your chest, terrified of tomorrow.
The constant what ifs.
It's that low-level hum of dread. What if the economy crashes? What if my health fails? What if my kids make terrible choices? Anxiety lives entirely in a future that hasn't happened yet.
So how does reading a text physically or psychologically stop that suffocating anxiety? Because the document points to the instruction to cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you.
The mechanism there is active release. It's not about ignoring the very real problems in the world, you know? It's about acknowledging your own limits. By reading and internalizing that unchanging promise, you force your anxious brain to anchor to a definitive statement in the present moment.
Okay.
The underlying message for a beginner is incredibly liberating. You do not have to carry the weight of the world. Your shoulders are not broad enough for it.
They really aren't.
Turning that key allows you to unlock those shackles and literally, cognitively drop those what-ifs at the feet of a creator who actually possesses the bandwidth and the strength to manage them. It is a profound invitation to step out of the cell and experience true lightness.
To step out of the cell and experience lightness. Let's just pause on that idea as we synthesize everything we've uncovered today. Because The spiritual path, especially when you're standing at the very beginning looking at that massive, intimidating book, does not have to be a heavy, complicated rule book that you have to perfectly decode to earn points.
It will.
It is simply about recognizing you've been handed a master key.
However, the document does end with a crucial reality check.
Okay, what is it?
A key, no matter how brilliantly it is crafted, no matter how much incredible potential it has to open every single door we've discussed today, is absolutely and entirely useless if it just stays in your pocket.
Or if that massive book just sits on your nightstand gathering dust, acting as a very expensive coaster for your water glass.
Exactly. Potential means nothing without action. The text holds the mechanical power to unlock the divine presence within you, to release that unshakable wide-angle joy, and to break the heavy chains of your past guilt and your future anxiety. But it fundamentally requires your active participation.
You have to pick it up.
You have to actually pick the tool up. You have to insert it into the messy, complicated reality of your daily life, and you have to choose to turn it.
So the big takeaway here, the mission for you listening today is this. Do not settle for a lockdown life. You don't have to live your life trapped behind heavy doors of fear or white-knuckling your way through the day, crushed by burdens you were never meant to carry.
Right.
Pick up the key. Put it into the lock. Turn it to activate the power within. Turn it to secure that foundational joy. Walk out of those prisons that have been holding you captive and step out into those wide-open, light-filled spaces.
It truly is an invitation to experience a completely different, liberated way of moving through the world.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we've covered a lot of ground today. We took that intimidating encyclopedia and reframed it as a singular tool of access. We've talked about the internal power it activates, the foundational joy that transcends circumstances, and the heavy burdens of the past and future that it literally lifts off your shoulders.
A completely new framework.
But I want to leave you with one final provocative thought. Something to really chew on as you go about the rest of your day, whether you're driving in your car or washing the dishes. As you look at the landscape of your own life right now, your own daily routines, your specific anxieties, your own internal struggles, what is the very first locked door you know you need to walk up to today and finally turn the key?